7:13, Governor Landry, you're more than welcome to call in if you like, or call Jordan Fiegel or email us, and we'll let you come on and talk about this. But when it comes to the Mid-Barrett area sediment diversion, we've discussed it extensively here in the morning with a lot of different signs, a lot of different people. And to hear the governor say this last week, I thought was disingenuous at best.
What happens when we pay people not to engage in their trade? The trade goes away.
Now, that is so misleading to me for so many different ways. And I say this, Governor, with all due respect, because the only reason we're paying people not to do this is because the oyster industry complained so much that in order to do what was necessary, as the scientists say, for coastal restoration, they said, okay, we're going to, and we'll get more into this with Zizarang in a minute, but because of coastal depletion and erosion, you used to have to go 20 miles. Now you have to go 2 miles. So you're going to have to go back to going 20 miles. So we're going to compensate you for that. Tim, I'm going to play this again. So for the governor to say,
you know what happens when we pay people not to engage in their trade? The trade goes away.
That's just silly to me, or foolish, or I got to ask, Governor, do you think people are really that stupid to think that this economic argument, that to make it seem as though the Mid-Barrett area sediment diversion, that we're paying people not to work, that's the biggest bunch of malarkey I've ever heard in my life, I think. Zizarang joins us right now, Louisiana State Representative. How you doing, Jerome?
I'm doing great, Tommy. Thanks for having me on this morning.
I know you got to deal with the governor. I don't. But that to me, I just couldn't believe that when I heard that. That I've heard a lot of different angles on this and all the time we've spoken about it. But at no point is anybody trying to pay people not to work, are they?
Well, I don't know if we applied that to all the trades, we would be in worse economic shape than we are now. But the other aspect about this is they don't have a right to fish. It's a state resource. All the shrimp, the oysters, they belong just as much to you and me or for the guy in Shreveport to Shreva as they do the fishermen. The state gives them the privilege to fish, but it doesn't give them a right to fish. That's a state resource. So this whole aspect about having to compensate them, quite frankly, we are mitigating for that, though. There is some aspect of the project.
But again, for his argument, I would say, Governor, then don't give them any money. You don't want to encourage them not to fish. Then the answer is not to stop construction on the Mid-Barrett area sediment diversion. The answer is to eliminate any compensation or anything to offset that and say, okay, look, you know, you got to go a little bit farther than you had to go before. Go fish, but we're not going to pay you not to. His argument kind of collapses on itself there, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I understand. There is no doubt, based upon his comments in the committee hearing, that he's not a fan of the project. And again, I've talked to the governor about this. I'm not saying he's anti-diversion. And he said he's not anti-diversion. He just doesn't want this project. He thinks the cost is too much, and there's other smaller diversions that we can do. Again, I don't want to speak for the governor, but I do know that he is not necessarily a fan of this big project. The other concerning things, too, is that when people, and other people at the table who said other things as well, but when they say that we're destroying communities and destroying fisheries, and that's completely untrue. I mean, you can find things in the EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, again, which has been studied over years to ensure that the benefits of the impacts of the project are being addressed. But you have to pick and choose certain things. Like, obviously, it's going to have an impact to brown shrimp. It's going to have an impact to oysters. It's not going to destroy them, and it's not going to destroy communities. So you have to look past the positive aspects of the EIS, or just what the EIS says, where it says that it will be an overall benefit protecting Louisiana communities, infrastructure, and also enhance fisheries and protect fisheries. So to say that it's destroying communities and fisheries in Louisiana is patently false and untrue.
Talk about the science involved that went into the development of this, if you will, Z, because you've been involved from the beginning.
Yeah, and it has been studied for a long time. Again, it's been over a decade in terms of when I was at CPRA, they started working on this project, and that was over 12 years ago. And They have extensively studied and evaluated and engineered this project. They also are, sometimes they'll say that, you know, they started the project without all the engineering. And that's untrue, too. They're using a Seymour process, contractor at risk, where DOTD does these all the time. The engineering is done. It's just parts of the aspect like land acquisition and other things that weren't done. So as to say that it wasn't studied, or to say that they did it without the engineering being complete, is not true. And there is no other project in CPRA's history that they've been hundreds of millions of dollars of projects, billions actually, but projects on the scope this size, this is the largest one. There is no other project that has had or engaged in more study and engineering than this project. And it will provide a positive benefit to communities, save communities, and restore and protect our coast.
Yeah, let me ask you about that when we come back, because I know Keith Hinckley very well, and I see a quote here at the NOLA.com article. I guess he testified. This is from Mark Schlefstein. Plaquemines Parish officials disagreed with what the Restore the Mississippi River Delta Coalition had to say and the Coalition to Restore Coast Louisiana had to say about the diversion project, saying that Keith Hinckley said that why sacrifice one community? We're just as important as the rest of the state. And I live in Belle Chasse. I live right down the street from Mitch Jurisich's son, who's the chairman of Louisiana Oyster Task Force. So I know these people personally. I'll look them eye to eye. I see them all the time. But I guess I'm just wondering, are we sacrificing Plaquemines Parish, the community, or just one aspect of that? And if we don't do this, well, then what's Plaquemines going to look like? Because I live near the high school, and I don't want to be able to fish out my front door. So we'll talk about that and more with Z Zarang when we come back, talking about the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. 720 traffic now, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jerome Z Zarang, state representative, about the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. Senate hearings last week. Delta Coalition saying the governor's comments signaled a dramatic shift in Louisiana's coastal program, which has been built on science and public good over politics. Plaquemines Parish President Keith Hinckley saying, why sacrifice one community? We're just as important as the rest of the state. Now, my question to you, Z, is as a Plaquemines Parish resident that lives near the high school, are we sacrificing the community or one aspect of the community? And if this doesn't get done, what does Plaquemines Parish look like without the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion? Because I don't know. I honestly don't. I'm just trying to do what's best for everybody in the parish, what's best for everybody in the state. And if the fishermen are inconvenienced, well, we're all inconvenienced in one way or the other with things that have to be done for the greater good. And again, I live right down the street from Mitch Jurisich's son. I'll look him in the eye and say this. So you tell me, what does the science say? You've been involved with this for a long time. And if this is built as constructed, is this going to destroy? Is this going to sacrifice Plaquemines Parish?
No, Tommy, not at all. Not sacrifice the community and not sacrifice the fisheries. In fact, if folks would read the EIS, they would say in the EIS, it basically says places like Myrtle Grove, Wood Park, Susie Park, Hermitage, Grand Bayou, Happy Jack, all places in Plaquemines Parish will experience more flooding without the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. So it's protecting the people and it's restoring and helping protect the resource as well. You know, if I were in Plaquemines Parish and I had a gas station, a hotel, a restaurant, a hardware store, I'd be all over the parish, President, as to why we aren't actually building this project. Could you imagine the economic boom, a $3 billion project? And in fact, Dr. Lawrence Scott did a study. At a minimum, over $147 million will be injected into the parish. So from an economic perspective, it makes sense. From a flood protection, community protection, it makes sense. You know, you have people, they're at the table in the hearing, you know, and they say this one particular individual often says that, well, you know, diversions and the river, it can't build land above sea level. Well, Tommy, I live in Terrebonne Parish. It's a coastal parish. In fact, we're in worse shape than Plaquemines because we don't have access to the river. Mm-hmm. But my property sits off of Bayou Black at a +8, which, you know, is not much. But down here, that's great. Well, I can assure you it didn't get at +8 from T. Bob Boudreau in the early 1800s with a hand crank and two mules building up that land. Mm-hmm. It was the river through the tributaries and distributaries building up the coast. So if you're saying this, you're being one of two things. Either you're being intentionally deceitful and trying to mislead people, or you're completely ignorant of the deltaic process. It's one or the other. So the fact that it won't build land or it's going to destroy communities, or and yet they also said that the Mississippi River, will, you know, it doesn't have enough sediment, it can't build land. Well, there, I agree with the fact that there is not as much sediment. In fact, 50% less sediment is coming down the river than it has historically. But, Tommy, we're only using less than 1%. In the master plan, it says that if we just use 10%, not all of it, what's available, just 10% of what's available, we could achieve all the land building goals in the master plan through the diversions, dredging. And again, they say we should dredge. 2/3 of the money is going to dredging. So to say that we're not dredging is not true. This project is good for the resource, good for the communities, and good for fisheries.
So I thought initially that this was all about the opposition was all about getting more compensation for the fishermen and oystermen. But then to hear the governor say,
well, unfortunately, I'm not really sure, because the TIG, you know, the trustee group sent a letter, the implementation group sent a letter to the state over a month ago, and basically saying, I'll say this as politely as I can, you know, either defecate or extricate yourself from the commode. Do something. Let us know what you're going to do. And they still haven't responded. So at this point, we're waiting for the state to determine what they're actually going to do. Quite frankly, I think they're slow walking it until the new administration gets in place. But I don't know. Everyone's waiting to see what CPRA is going to do with this project.
You're talking about the new administration in Washington?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
All right, Z, thank you. Appreciate your time and the info. Mark Rosa joins us as we come back. Take a look at Monday Morning Markets with Mark, 7:30, time for WWL First News. 7:44, 16 till 8, one of my favorite weeks of the year, because it's a shorter week, a lot of football, a lot of family, a lot of food, a lot of fun. A lot of Mark Rosa, who joins us now to talk about Monday Morning Markets with Mark. Mark, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Tommy. Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me about Wall Street. Do they meet on Friday? Yes, right?
Yes. Okay. I think they meet on Friday. I'm sure that Thursday, obviously, is just an abbreviated week. And Tommy, I tell you what, you and I have talked about this before. Sometimes, like this coming week, it's just chock full of economic news, and last week was the opposite. They had very little coming out. But they had some companies that were reporting earnings, and that buoyed the market averages, the Dow and the S&P. Dow looks like a record at 44,620. And it's all this kind of momentum has continued since the election. It's been called the Trump trade. And if we have prospects of lower inflation through more energy production and lower regulations, what more could a person want to have their 401k balances go up? And I think that's what's happening to a great extent here. And remember that the stock prices are largely dependent on corporate earnings and interest rates. And we've got one of them. The corporate earnings is down. Interest rates I'll talk about in a second. But it's at least one of the downslope of the interest rates. There's not a lot of worry about interest rates going up. So I think the combination of all of them has really been really been good news for the market. They like what they see. And it's ticked up, you know, just gradually. And it's produced numbers where we are, over 44,000, close to 45.
So
this week, go ahead.
No, I want to hear.
I was going into this week.
Okay, please.
All right. So this week we have the first revision of third quarter GDP. And for everybody's knowledge, the third quarter ends on September 30th. Then they start putting everything together, the Commerce Department, and then it comes up on October 30th, when the GDP is released. Then the next 2 months within that quarter, they have revisions that come out. By the time you finish that, you're into the next quarter and you start to party all over again. But it looks like it's going to be consistent. They originally said third quarter GDP was 2.8. First revision is due out this week. They are expecting it to have to be unchanged at 2.8. And Tom, it's really something, because I've watched a lot of analysts comments over the weekend about Europe, and Europe is having a horrible time. Their economies are just having a terrible time, still coming out of COVID, and they're not resilient. There's nothing that has the financial resilience of the United States. Ours, some people don't know this, but ours is the largest economy in the world. And for it to grow at almost 3%, after COVID. That's really a testament to our resilience and how we operate under a capitalistic system. Most of Europe is under socialist systems, and it just curtails the growth in their economies. I mean, they just can't get out of their own way. So this week also is personal income and personal spending. Last month, both of them were up. This month, both of them are expected to be up. And for the past several months, it looks like they run in tandem. I mean, if personal income is going up, people's they go out and spend much of that money that their income has increased. And then, of course, we have the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. Now, with this, I'll segue into what they're doing, is the personal consumption expenditure for October. That's what the Fed prefers. We have CPI and PPI, Consumer Price Index, Producer Prices, but the Fed likes their own, and they use the CPI to look at their numbers and then produce their own numbers. So for October, it's coming in at 0.2%, or expected to. Last month was the same at 0.2%, and the year-over-year has ticked up a little bit, because if we have a bunch of 0.2s in a row, we have to annualize that. That's 2.4% increase inflation for a year. Last month, the year-over-year was at 2.1, and now it's at 2.3. Nothing consequential, but the Fed is going to be looking at that very carefully, because they would prefer it closer to 2 than moving away from 2. So the Fed meets in 22 days. I mean, it was an overwhelming initial numbers. What Wall Street was betting on, where the interest rates were going to go, it was like 80% chance that they were going to cut rates for the third meeting in a row this fall. And now it's 50-50 split. So it's like Wall Street is teetering to say, well, maybe the Fed may not cut rates, given the strength of the economy, numbers that we just went over, some outlook on inflation, where's personal spending going, those types of numbers. And it's like they might sit on their hands. So that'll be an interesting meeting in 22 days. And then in January through March, there were more cuts expected. This was just in the summer, in July, when we were talking about their first rate cut in so many years that came in August. 44%, there is no cut in the spring. And then you've got a growing number. It's a small number, but a growing number of analysts that are apparently anticipating, or maybe they're just hedging, they're anticipating a rate increase in the first few months. And this might be 10, 12, 13% of the people reporting on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Board. But it's that would be interesting. That wouldn't be good news, but it would be in response to a rapidly growing economy.
So let me take a break. When we come back, we'll pick it up. When those earnings reports come in, those are report cards, but that's from before the election, right?
They had both, before and after. We've had some earnings like last week.
But this is what you mean? But the third quarter, right? Is that what we're saying?
Oh, third quarter GDP now.
GDP. So that's when do earning meant. Reports come in?
Earnings reports are throughout the quarter. They're sprinkled throughout. And for instance, this last week we had NVIDIA, the AI chip company. They came out with earnings just last week. So you have company earnings reports that are coming out throughout the quarter.
Let me take a break. I'm trying to figure out how that factors into what the Fed decides they're going to do, because then we're back to what's good is bad and what's bad is good. And for people that are waiting to buy a home or wanting to buy a home, what does that mean? All right?
Yep,
good.
Sure.
Good. We'll talk about that when we come back. 7:52, 8 till 8, Tommy Tucker. Taking a look at the week ahead on Wall Street, Monday morning markets with Mark, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. I'm trying to understand all of this, and I know you are too. He'll explain when we get back. Traffic now, WWL. 7:57, 3 till 8. Quickly back to Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Mark, I'm trying to figure out how you balance successive economy, quarterly earnings, with the Fed meeting in 22 days and interest rates and stock market and people who want to buy a home and waiting for interest rates to go back to 3-4%. You got 3 minutes. Explain it all, please.
Tommy, what I didn't say in response, well, thank you. I didn't say in response to what the Fed is anticipated doing, that mortgage rates have inched up towards 7%.
Uh-huh.
Now, just in August, they started with a 5.
Right.
Because the rate march was in, the Fed was going to start lowering rates. that was going to carry into 2025. And when the economy is performing better than average, their job is to keep the economy between the ditches. We don't want to grow too fast, and we certainly don't want a recession. So that's one of the many tools that we've gone over in the past couple of years, because they've been so active. We've been saying, well, if interest rates are going down or they're ratcheting them down, there's a reason for that, that the economy needs a boost. If the economy doesn't need a boost, and we'll tell by many of the numbers that are coming out this week and the next couple of weeks, if they don't need a boost, what if they sit on their hands? So all of the reductions that financial institutions, Jefferson Financial was one of them, we started lowering rates in anticipation. If that's kind of being erased, then rates are going to rise a bit just to catch up with where they are. And for those, I mean, you and I were saying it back in July, August, for those that, oh, I'm going to wait till they're 2% again, I don't know if you're going to live that long. So regardless who we're talking about. So the people that jumped on it, I know a couple of people at Odyssey that jumped on the 5% bandwagon, and now I don't know if you could find that. Bank rate was a good source. I know we have a rep coming on to the program about bank rate periodically. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to go to bankrate.com, you'll see nationwide rates, and you could at least tell if there's anybody offering some in the fives, if there's anybody offering some in the sixes, including the local firms, the people that you may have your mortgage with currently. You can call them and see where their rates are. But if the Fed misses the December meeting, I think that's going to be a clear signal that rates are going to come back up. You know, then all the bets are off. But the market wants another rate cut before the end of the year. So we'll see what happens.
Hi, Mark. Be interesting to watch. Thank you, sir. Mark Rose, the president and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Go to jeffersonfinancial.org. You'll find some useful calculators there. We'll come back, talk to Jeremy Alford about the special session